Good morning, church. It's good to be with you this morning. You'll notice I'm not in the pulpit. I wander, and I don't want to fall off. So I'll go back and forth. I want to start by saying I am extremely impressed with the music ministry of this church, and I know you appreciate them. Good for you. Good for you. Now, just a reminder, Faith Community, United Methodist Church, living the journey, sharing the story. One of the things when I came up to the church to prepare for today, I met with Jim Busey and we talked about the church, and he told me a lot of things about all the good things you're doing. And Pastor Tim, a few moments ago, talked about your four strategic missional initiatives around worship, family ministries, adult discipleship, and outreach. And I am extremely impressed with how comprehensive and broad scope your ministry is in this particular congregation. You are to be commended. So, Jeff, next slide, if we could, please. Generosity. Generosity is a lifestyle. For most of it, we equate it only to money, but in reality, generosity is about how do I use my time? How do I treat people? If you have a clerk that's having a bad day, are you snappy with them, or do you thank them and try to improve their day? That's generosity. We're going to be talking specifically today more about the side of generosity that relates to our assets. And it's very important for us in the American culture where what has become our true idol. That's not rhetorical. Money. Money has become our true idol. The result is we've taken God out of the equation with regard to how we relate to our money. And so I want to talk about that a little bit, and some of it's going to be my own personal journey in learning about generosity and what the scriptures have to say about generosity, and move us to a place where hopefully through prayerful discernment, notice those two words, prayerful discernment, I can examine my life and see how my life is in relationship to God in relating to these gifts that God gives to me, including financial resources. Jeff, next slide, please. Now, I grew up in a place called Chautauqua. How many people have heard of Chautauqua? A few of you. Chautauqua is in western New York. It's between Erie and Buffalo. It started as a Methodist training ground for Sunday school teachers back in the mid-1800s. It is now a cultural, religious, recreational resort. In the wintertime, long title, isn't it? And that's part of their logo. But in the wintertime, the population is 300. Kind of small. There's a very good reason, of which we are beginning to experience some of the reason why today, because it's cold outside, is it not? And they have not 30 or 40 or 50 inches, 400 inches of snow a year. That's a lot of snow. And I'll tell you more about that in just a few moments, but 400 inches of snow, who wants to stay there in the wintertime? I grew up there. I went to a one schoolhouse, K-12 school, where I actually was one of 21 in my class, and I graduated as the valedictorian. I wish you hadn't clapped. You now need to know I had a B-plus average, and I was the valedictorian. So what's that tell you? So anyhow, I grew up in Chautauqua, and it was a great place to grow up because in the summertime, the population went from 300 to 30,000. Big jump. And they had an amphitheater, and it seated between 10 and 15,000 people. And I was able to talk to and shake hands with Robert Kennedy, Van Cliburn, if you're a classical musician, a comedian that at one time I would have been glad to announce that I got to talk to him and shake his hands, but no longer, Bill Cosby. That kind of changed the perception, but I got to meet some really quality entertainers, politicians, political scientists. You can go through the list. And also, it was just a great place to create a business at 9 years old, where I had 30 lawns that I took care of. And that helped me to save up in preparation for college. And from Chautauqua, I went to Fredonia, to the State University of New York, where I graduated with a Bachelor of Science, I no longer say BS, a Bachelor of Science degree, and math physics. Are you impressed? Don't be. I squeaked by. But I will say the first 2 years I'm not proud of. Growing up with 300 people in the wintertime, you couldn't get in trouble because all there was snow, so you had to stay in. So I went to Fredonia, and all of a sudden I'm in a crowd I'm not proud of. I found Christ one time when I was walking home. I blacked out from too much alcohol and found myself in one of those 15-foot ditches along Route 90, laying in 12 inches of water and a foot of snow on top of me, and couldn't remember how I got there. And so I went to my friend Ed Evans, who had always been talking to me about, who's this person, Jesus? And I asked him to tell me about it, because life had to be better than waking up in a ditch like that. And he shared Jesus with me. And Easter Sunday 1973, I accepted Christ at 3:00 in the morning. It overwhelmed me with grace and the forgiveness that God offered to me and the relationship God offered to me. And remember, this was Easter Sunday. I decided to go to church that Sunday. First time I had been there since confirmation, I believe. And you'll remember in the 70s, the hippie era, I had jeans that had patches all over them, and I had a flannel shirt, and I was wearing army boots that I probably got at the Salvation Army. And because I was a poor college student, my parents didn't have a whole lot. And I had hair down to here. And so I walked in dressed like that, and I never knew that the parting of the Red Sea was part of the Easter story. When I walked in, the people looked at me, their eyes got big because they're in their Easter best, and they just parted. I could sit even in the back row in the corner if I wanted to. And I walked in, and they were just getting ready to start the prelude, to start the service, and I heard from the front in the chancel area from the choir, George Cooper! And I looked up, and there was Mrs. Rice, the lady who gave me a passion, my teacher that gave me a passion for math. And so she came running down the aisle. Now, Mrs. Rice was about this tall and about that wide. And you can see her running down the aisle, robes flying, big grin on her face, and she got to me, and she put her arms around me and gave me a big bear hug and picked me up and said, I can see it in your eyes. You finally found Jesus, didn't you? Let's sit over here. Get out of the way, lady. And we sat down, and when it came time for the chance of choir to sing, she just strutted up the aisle and said, just stay there, George. And she went up and she sang with the choir, came back and sat with me, invited me to Easter dinner, and she became the first person to begin to disciple me and gave me a passion for the Word of God. Now, remember, this is during my junior year. I went back and I was looking for a new group of friends to hang out with, and I went to InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. And towards the end of the year, it was time to elect officers, but one evening I was not able to attend because I had a Calculus 4 exam, so I didn't attend, and I came back the next week, and I had been elected president for the following year. Never miss a meeting. So the following year, InterVarsity did really well. We quadrupled in size. We started doing missional outreach. We started, instead of waiting for students to come to us at the student center, we started going to the dorms. It went really well, and towards the end of my senior year, my colleagues that were leaders and that were part of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship and my advisor started telling me I should go into ministry. Guess what my answer was? No way. No, 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 no. And I went back to the snow to escape the call. The snow was easier than the call. And so and this was in the day before portable snowblowers, so I was the portable snowblower with a shovel. And a lot of those buildings were built in the 1800s, and if you let that snow build up, melt a little bit, things would cave in. So somebody had to get up on those roofs and shovel it off. And that's what I did. And in the process, I started taking care of these cottages for people that came up during the season. If we can go to the next slide, please, Jeff. You can see the difference. This is the Athenaeum, one of the largest remaining wooden structured hotels in America. And you can see the difference between the summertime on the left and the wintertime on the right. And so that's one of the places I did a lot of shoveling. But I also took care of a lot of cottages. I would go in, examine to make sure pipes weren't breaking, no roof problems, shoveling roofs, et cetera, et cetera. And one young couple, his name was Tim, invited me to come to a spiritual retreat for his leaders. He was from North Canton, but they were holding the retreat in Chautauqua. So I went, I attended. Afterwards, he came to me and said, "You know, you're called into ministry." I said, "I'm too busy shoveling snow." And he said, "No, you're not. You're going into ministry." And I said, "No way. If you want to fire me, fire me. I'm not going into ministry." Now, this is where I learned generosity. A month later, he called me up and said, "I'm going to be at the cottage. And I want you to open it up, have it warmed up, and I want you to plan on spending the morning with me." And I thought, uh-oh, he's going to fire me for being obnoxious about my response to the call. I walked in and he already had the coffee made. He poured it for me. He sat down with me and said, "George, I still believe and have been praying for a month, and I truly believe you're called into the ordained ministry." And I said, "Tim, you know how I..." He said, "Be quiet." He's the boss, so I listen for once. And he said, "Now, to make it harder for you, I went to Ashland Theological Seminary, and I want to show you a piece of paper." It was an application. It was already filled out. I turned it over. It was stamped "approved." Now, he must have had the right relationship with the seminary president, because that's illegal for somebody to sign your application to go to a school. But he had it stamped, and it was approved. And I had my out. I said, "Tim, that's great. I appreciate it, but I can't afford it." And he said, "Well, I've already paid your tuition for the first full year. I've already paid your apartment for the first full year. I've already paid for your books for the first full year. I paid all of your fees for the first full year. Now what are you going to tell God?" I went to Ashland Theological Seminary in January. Next slide, please. So we can go on to the next one since I already introduced that. So I learned generosity that way, and as a result, I've had a passion for stewardship. So for those of you that may not be familiar with the term stewardship, in reality, it in the Greek is synonymous with the word management. It's when we're called to be good managers of the resources that God places into our care. And we're called to be good managers of that in our relationship with God. It's a spiritual issue. It's not a financial issue. Now, one of the stories that Tim read for us this morning is from Genesis 29. And I would like to read a portion of it with you, if I might, just as a reminder, because it reflects our culture and where we are today when we approach generosity. Now, Jacob was the son of who? Not Abraham. Isaac. There you go. And Jacob had a brother by the name of Esau. And Jacob and Esau got along really well. They liked to play sports together. They played games together. They were good kids. They put the garden in for the folks. They did all those things always together, right? No, they were complete opposites. Esau, I would qualify as a football linebacker type of guy that was always hunting. He was big. He was brawny. He was tough and he was all of those types of things. In the meantime, Jacob was more the stay in the house and be studious and listen to his mom's teachings. And he was a little bit different. He was also a bit of a troublemaker because he was a con man. Remember when he was able to get the birthright from his brother because his brother was just plain hungry? Or he went to his dad and got the blessing to be the firstborn to receive the inheritance. As a result, Esau said, well, you're my brother and I love you, so that's okay, right? What did Esau want to do to him? Kill him. So would you stay in town? No. Somebody's got all the right answers over here. So Jacob's on the run, and you heard the story just a few moments ago. But he had, on the journey, he stops, and he lays down. And when he awoke, he had had this dream about Jacob's ladder. And when he awoke, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. Surely the Lord was in this place. He was afraid. How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. Now, does that sound to you like the typical Jacob we've heard about before? To me, it sounds like a conversion experience. Notice, he states, surely the Lord is in this place. He was afraid. How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. Sounds like a conversion. Then the old Jacob comes back. Because notice what Jacob then vows. If God will be with me, I'm going to Cooperize it a bit. If God will be with me, if God will watch over me on this journey, if God will give me food to eat and clothes to wear, if I return safely to my father's house, then the Lord will be my God, and the stone that I have set up as a pillar will be God's house, and all that you give me, I will give you a tenth. If, then. If you bless me to my expectations, then I will practice generosity in giving back to you, God. Even though he's been in the gate of heaven and he's sensed the very presence of God himself. If, then. How do we in our culture practice the if, then? Think about it for a moment. That one's semi-rhetorical. But if you think about it for a moment, if then, if I were to ever win the lottery, even though no United Methodist ever utilizes the lottery, I know that. But if you were to win the lottery, then I'd give God 10%. If I get a raise, then I'll begin to increase the percentage that I give to Christ Church. If I get a promotion, then. If my spouse comes through this cancer treatments and survives, then I'll start to go to church. We play the if-then game no different than Jacob did back in his time. And that's where many American Christians begin in their journey towards generosity. Next slide, please, Jeff, and then we can go to the next one since I just got done reading those. The reality is that American Christianity, we've spent so much time not talking about the spiritual issue of money that we at times find ourselves caught in who we are as a result of our culture. You all remember the Great Recession and the impact it had on the economy with the housing markets, with jobs, with the stock market, and that had a dramatic impact on those that were retired. Etc. Americans believed their lifestyle was affected in a major way. In 2008, during the Great Recession, it was 22%. In 2011, when the market was coming back again, when the automakers were starting, had almost paid back their loans to the government, when jobs were starting to be recreated again, the percentage actually increased of Americans that said that their lifestyle had been dramatically impacted. They reduced their giving from 20%, and then 20% reduced their giving, and then it grew to 30%, even at a time when things were beginning to improve. Those that were tithing dropped to 4%, the lowest it had been in decades, when previously it had been at least 5 to 7%. 5 to 7% is kind of sad in the first place about tithing, but it's even worse when you drop down to 4%. By the way, what is the tithe? 10%, gross or net? I believe it's gross, but when I'm talking to people, I usually say, and I have to know them well if I'm going to say it this way, I don't care, pick one, it's better than you're doing now. I was at a church one time that told me I was not allowed to talk to about the tithe. It's a four-letter word. T-I-T-H. Okay, I promise I won't talk about the tithe, but I may talk about the tithe. But also, during that time, 47% of Americans believed that the economy would not improve for several years to come. Now, I told you I'm a math physics major, so when I look at a slide like this, you could think I'm only looking at the numbers. I'm not. I'm looking at the emotions and the theology and the status of people's hearts behind a slide like this. And the one word that I would say that this slide reflects is fear. Even though we worship a God with a cattle of a thousand hills and a God that can provide all things, our response is fear. But in contrast to that, next slide please, Jeff. This 2013, sorry, it's not a little more contemporary, but if you look at who's the largest percentage of charitable contributors in America, what group? Individuals. Now, it says there for individuals, 72%. If you add in the bequests, it increases another percentage. And then if you add in foundations, it's actually 83% of all charitable giving in the United States. This isn't religion. This is all charities. 83% comes from individual. Now, again, you could think as a math physics major, I'm analyzing the data. I see the theology and the feelings and the emotions of people. We are created in God's image. By being created in God's image, that means we have a hunger. We are intelligent and capacity for intelligence. We have capacity for love, for grace, for forgiveness, for creativity, but also for God so loved the world that he gave. We have a hunger. Everyone across the globe has a hunger to practice generosity because we are created in God's image. That's why the highest percentage of contributions come from individuals. That's a reflection of who we are in God's image. We have a hunger. In 2012, though, in contrast, there was a study done, and this reflects how we desire to be generous. But there was a study done in 2012 that the one time of the week that the average mainline American Christian experienced the greatest amount of guilt was not on Friday night when they were out doing things they shouldn't have been doing, but it was on Sunday morning during the offering. The greatest amount of guilt was during the offering. Why? It used to be we practice giving to the church on a regular basis. Back in the 80s, religion was the number one, it still is, but back in the 80s, it was 55% of all charitable giving went to churches and synagogues, religious institutions. That has dropped to 32%. There's one reason, and you all have it with you. It's either in your wallet or in your purse. Credit cards, exactly. It makes impulsive buying easy, which then puts us in a bind when it comes to how can I give the amount that my heart desires. As a result, during the time of the offering, I'm thinking, how much can I give? And it's just not there because of that impulsive buying. But we hunger to be generous. And that's what this morning is about, to allow God to begin to take control of our financial resources instead of plastic. Next slide, please. So I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this slide other than emphasizing generous giving is a spiritual issue. It's about my relationship with God. Next slide, please. I'll skip that one, please. I know my stories are taking too much time. So the basic pathways to discipleship, which is one of your core values, is basic Christianity, Bible knowledge, spiritual gifts, servant leadership, assumes worship and small group participation. And one more to add to that, next slide please, is generosity as a spiritual discipline. I had a gentleman that his daughter came to me to do a wedding. His name was Larry. And we did the wedding, and the following Sunday he was in church. And I greeted him and said, "How's your daughter doing?" He said, "Great. I just want to thank you for the ceremony you did, and something about what you said really impressed me. And I want to start coming to this church. Is that okay?" "Of course it's okay." And he was there for a number of years, and there was one of those times like this in the annual life of the church where you're asking individuals to estimate what they might give in the coming year after prayerful discernment. And I challenged them to try the tithe, not the tithe, but the tithe, for 3 months. And if at the end of that 3 months, if their life wasn't better, to stop. He came to me 5 years later when I left that church and told me, "You married my 2 daughters. You baptized my 3 grandchildren. You did the renewal of the 50 years of marriage with my wife. And all of those are things to celebrate in your ministry with me in this time that I've had at your church. But the one thing you did that dramatically impacted my life was to challenge me to try tithing." Suddenly, when I talked to my wife, she listened better. Well, let me reverse that. I listened better, and our relationship is better than it's ever been. My kids, when they would come to me for advice, half the time they wouldn't listen. Now they seek me out, and they actually listen and are doing what I ask them to do. He was a fireman, and I've become the chaplain for our firehouse as a result of the change that people saw in me. My life was transformed when I turned over to God my giving patterns. And was giving to God, not to a budget, not to a building, not to a program, but giving to God, and my total life changed. And he's an illustration of what happens when we implement that other spiritual discipline of generous giving. Next slide, please. So, one of the things I would like you to note would be from, and I'll just read those 2 slides, but Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord. Now remember, Zacchaeus was the short guy that was in the tree that wanted to see Jesus. And Jesus said, "I'm coming to your house for dinner tonight." And when he got there, after Jesus had been teaching, Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor. And if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back 4 times the amount." Next slide, please. Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham, for the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost." Notice Zacchaeus, when he said he would give half, Jesus didn't say, "Now we can build a community center." The emphasis was, "Now the kingdom of God has truly come to this house." This man has experienced the living God in a whole new way, and it's transformed his being. Next slide, please. I encourage you, if you currently are not one of those individuals who is tithing, to begin thinking about the way you give based on a proportion of your income. No one can jump from 1% or $25 a month to 10%. It takes increments and can take 3 to 5 years to get to that point of 10%, gross or net. I don't care. You know my response to that. But you'll notice, and you've saw this last week, where it shows you your weekly income, and then you can move over to what it would look like if you were to give 1%, 5%, and move up to 10%. And that's from Malachi 3, the teaching about the tithe, where God challenges the people of Israel and saying, "You've been robbing God." And they said, "How?" "Because you've been withholding the tithe." Now, the tithe was for the purpose of sustaining the church in their age, in the Old Testament, to sustain the temple, to maintain the relationship with God. It was all for ongoing, everyday mission and ministry for the people of Israel, and in today's age, for the people of the church in service to the community to be a witness to the rest of the community, to practice the tithe. So, would you prayerfully consider stepping up as we come in a few moments to that time when you will be asked to fill out the estimate of giving card? If you haven't done so, I hope you'll take a few minutes. You'll have the time. I hope you'll take a few minutes to prayerfully discern your circumstances and how might you be able to move from 2% to 3%. You may have to do a little math. That's okay. It's easy enough. What would it take for you to be able to move up to the next level in the way that you give so that you can practice the spiritual discipline of deepening your relationship with God? This is a Cooperism of Martin Luther, who said there needs to be three conversions in a Christian's life. Conversion of the mind, and this a conversion of the mind so you understand the gospel. Conversion of the heart so you accept the gospel. Conversion of the wallet so you live the gospel. You may have seen that cartoon of an individual that's being baptized and they've been asked to give their whole life to God. And as they're being baptized, they reach in their wallet, and as they're going under the water, they're holding the wallet above the water as their way of saying, I'm not yet ready to let go of my financial resources. So next slide, please. I would encourage you to be in this type of prayer. Phrase it any way you want to, but Lord, what would you have me do for the vision you have for the mission and ministry of the Faith Community United Methodist Church? Next slide. I encourage you to begin preparing for that time when you will fill out an estimate of giving card. This is a continuation of our worship together as we make a commitment to God. Every time you have a baptism, every time you accept new members, each and every one of you is encouraged to renew your commitment to being a follower of Jesus Christ, to what it means to being a disciple of Jesus Christ, of surrendering all, that God might have total control of your life. If you're a visitor with us this day, this is one of those days in the life of the church where we do talk about money. We don't talk about it every day, but we need to talk about it. It's a spiritual issue. If you're a visitor with us today, we don't expect you to fill out an estimate of giving card, but we do invite you to come and join us for the meal, meet some people, make some new friends, and just join us. Members, I want to emphasize to you that if you do not wish to fill out the estimate of giving card, that's okay. There's no pressure here. This is about the hunger and the desire to deepen your walk with Christ. The meal that follows is a celebration of your mission and ministry together and your willingness to deepen your understanding of what it means to be a follower of Jesus Christ and to reflect his love and grace throughout the entire week, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day.